Okay. Okay, it is 6.05 p.m. on Tuesday, January 23rd, 2024. We'll call the Common Council meeting to order. Let's stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Middleton.
Here.
Varga.
Here.
Romano.
Here.
Wiegold.
Here.
Robinson.
Here.
In front of you are the minutes from our last meeting, which was on Tuesday, January 9th. Were there any changes or corrections? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, second by Tad. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Next up is swearing in of our new police officer, D.C. Hirschberger.
All right.
Chief Rosie.
Thank you. So, well, first of all, I want to thank the family and the officers for showing the overwhelming support of Casey, joining the Columbus City Police Department. Casey's been a great asset to the community in his short time with us, so and a great asset to our department, so thank you for that. He brings a positive energy, so thanks, Mom and Dad, for that. With him, he's doing a great job in the FTO process, and can't wait to see his success in the police work.
Swearing that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
Swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the State of Indiana.
The Constitution of the State of Indiana.
And that I will faithfully and impartially.
And I will faithfully and impartially.
Discharge my duties.
Discharge my duties.
As a police officer.
As a police officer.
Of the City of Columbia City.
Of the City of Columbia City.
According to the law.
According to the law.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Friends of Casey, we appreciate you being here. If you'd like to go celebrate or leave now, that's perfectly fine. So, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Next up is a presentation by the Propel US 30 Study Committee. We're glad to have you here, and we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. It's a tough act to follow, but I'll do my best. So thank you for taking the time to allow us to come speak to you tonight. My name is Rusty Holt. I work for WSP. I'm the study manager for the Propel US 30 East study. So on the screen here are the outcomes that we're looking for as part of the study. As a reminder, the Propel US 30 study is a planning and environment linkage study. That's where PEL, PEL comes from. So there are PEL studies are an optional planning process before a project or project scope is identified. They look to engage the public and agency stakeholders as early in the as possible in the process so that their input can be taken into consideration before we get into that project stage. PEL studies have an overarching goal of identifying the next generation of transportation improvements in the corridor. So that's why we're looking at the corridor. It's important for the community. We want to make sure we do this right. So we're looking at it holistically. As a reminder, we're here talking about US 30 East, which includes Columbia City and Whitley County, but also Kosciuszko County and Allen County. We're looking at this segment together so we can get a picture of how this part of the corridor works as a whole. We're also in pretty constant communication with the rest of the study teams. There are three other ones shown here in the different colors, but especially 30 West, we want to make sure 30 seems similar and has progressed similarly through our study process. Here's a high-level review of our study schedule. We just came out of Purpose and Need, where we had our last public meeting in June, one of which was here in Columbia City. We're now in the alternatives analysis phase. We've published the level one screening of that phase called the Universe of Alternatives. It's published on our website. We had just finished up our public comment period at the end of last year, where we had about 100 people provide some sort of comment to us, including Mayor Daniel. So we appreciate that feedback, and we're looking at that now as we move towards finalizing that document. So I'm going to go through what that level one screening looked like for us and kind of the results of that, and then talk through the rest of the study process. So as I mentioned, the level one portion of screening, the Universe of Alternatives, we just finished up. There are two more levels that we anticipate through the alternative screening analysis. So at the beginning, we start with a broad range of alternatives. That's the universe of alternatives. And then at each level, as we go through the screening, there'll be fewer number of surviving alternatives. But each one will have more detail behind it. So we'll look at each alternative in more detail. Next, we started the universe with 55 different improvement concepts. These were common through all four study areas. They also had similar definitions for all four study areas just to make sure everybody was starting from the same starting point and not any one area was starting with something preconceived thought solution in mind. One of those 55 alternatives will be a no-build alternative. First, we have to look at no-build just because that's part of the planning process, but also there may be some areas that really are functioning okay and we don't really need to push forward improvement concepts. Because safety is an NDOT priority, you'll see lots of safety improvements inside of there, including some proven countermeasures that that we know improve safety, such as reduced conflict intersections or green T intersections, as well as other more technical or technology-focused, like intersection warning systems or freight priority systems. We also know this initial list has some things that people like and some things that people don't like. It's kind of the why we did it this way, so that we can show that we've looked at everything. It's not just starting from things that we think we like or we think the public likes. It's everything, and let's see where we go from there. Next is our screening methodology, how we moved through the universe of alternatives, how we took that 55 and narrowed it down. We looked at two primary factors from a qualitative standpoint. The purpose and need elements, which for us, purpose and need was related to safety. First and foremost, safety, because we had more crashes than the other study areas, and safety came up through all of our public comments, so safety was our first need. Also, local mobility, making sure we improve local traffic across US 30 or accessing US 30, and then regional mobility, people traveling along US 30 outside of the region, just to make sure those three are needs are taken care of as part of the study. Second was practicality, which is it reasonable? Now, practicality has a very specific definition from Federal Highway, so there are four points that we looked at as part of the practicality, whether it can be accomplished without an extraordinarily high cost, if it's feasible from a technology and logistical standpoint, if it's appropriate in scale and scope for the transportation problems identified, and if it's not expected to create other unacceptable impacts, such as socioeconomic impacts or environmental impacts. So we had yes, no, and neutral. Most of our answers were yes or no. Neutral came into play if we just didn't have all the information we needed, or if there was a yes and a no, we kind of drifted towards neutral for that. And then based on the answers for those, the purpose and need for each of those yes and no's moved into the screening process of what survived and didn't survive. So next we have some illustrative examples of things that we were looking at. Again, they're just examples. They're not things that we specifically started with or honed in on. So the improvements on these next two slides, again, are just give you a scope of what we looked at, whether they're intersection improvements, adding and lengthening turn lanes, or larger scale corridor improvements where we would look at access management or consolidating some access points, maybe have a limited access or more limited access facility. Some other examples, spot improvements, gateway treatments, some other transit and non-motorized improvements, really looking at everything that could possibly help US 30 from the safety and mobility standpoint. So at the end of the universe of alternatives, we found ourselves with this series of 55 improvements, some of which scored really well in purpose and need, like lots of yeses. Some of them had a yes, and some of them didn't meet any of the needs. So they fell into three buckets, which are shown here, primary, complementary, and design elements. Primary are concepts that address the majority of our needs that we found. Complementary maybe meets one need or two needs, but doesn't meet that third one. So it could be paired with one of the primaries, or maybe two complementary go together to make an improvement that makes sense. And then design elements are things that they don't really meet the needs of the corridor, but they're good ideas anyway. Like maybe we need lighting, maybe we need drainage, but that by itself doesn't solve the needs out there. So those are design elements that will be carried forward as we look further into the study. So as we mentioned earlier, there are three levels of study that we'll be looking at. The first level, the universe, is what we just finished up with. It's the large bucket and what's practical. Next, as we move through level two and level three, we'll be looking at things in more detail. Again, a smaller number of alternatives, but we're looking in more detail at them and looking specifically at locations for them. So this level two screening that we're moving into next, after the universe is finalized and published, we're moving into the level two screening. That's where we'll look at the solutions that survive the universe. We'll be looking at specific locations. So this intersection does this list of 15 primary and complementary concepts actually work here versus just work somewhere on the corridor. So we'll be looking through that at level two at each intersection in our study area the most important intersections are the ones that we're focusing on first. And then when we move to level three, it'll look at the corridor as a whole, and then this intersection plus the two next to it, or the three next to it, just kind of the things that work together. So as far as schedule, what we're looking forward to level two is hoping to publish that in this spring. And then level three, once we get level two feedback, it'll be published to the website, have a public comment period. We'll finish up the level two and then publish level three, which we anticipate to be this summer. And then we'll have a public information meeting attached to the level three screening report. We'll get feedback, again, feedback from that, feedback from the public website, comment period, and then use that to come up with the final Pell study with the final report shown here. So with that, that's the end of my formal presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions. I do encourage everybody to stay connected. We have lots of social media and website information. We're out in the community every month with office hours, whether it's here or in a neighboring city. We have two office hours every month that we're at. And we just encourage you to stay engaged as leaders in the community. We want to make sure that we work together and move the process forward. So with that, any questions?
Questions from the council?
Good question. Okay. So the spring is the level two.
Yes.
Summer is level three.
That's the plan, yes.
And then what's the final resolution after that? What's the timeline for that, do you think?
It'll be the fall sometime. Okay. We haven't, spring, summer, and fall, so.
Okay. So about every 3 months, they'll move them to the next step. Okay. Just curious.
There's lots of moving parts.
Sure.
We need to make sure we line up with just the things that are going on both inside of NDOT and outside of NDOT.
Sure.
So lots of considerations for when things actually get published, but that's generally the time frame, yeah.
Okay. Other questions from the council?
I think it should be noted, and Rusty's heard me, read from me, all kinds of good things on this process. But I think it should be noted that the bypass solution is not recommended to move forward. I think that's a big deal for our community. As we've talked about consistently, we've seen how other communities have been bypassed and how it really damages their economy. And so from day one, we've been advocating against a bypass, but instead use what you have right now. And I appreciate that kind of got taken out, the bypass option got taken out along this process. As I understand, Rusty, that the kind of the next phase is going to be more granular, where we are going to go kind of more intersection by intersection. Is that true?
Yes.
Generally speaking?
So it'll be... We're trying to show the biggest impact that might be possible at every intersection. So looking at all of the options that survive that level two screening, showing them on top or next to each other, so we can say, like, if it is a reduced conflict intersection or an interchange or a signal, all these things are viable at this intersection and this one and this one. And then level three will kind of take it further and say, well, you wouldn't put these two next to each other. So that's the path that we're on.
Rusty, can you define for our city council what is a reduced conflict intersection?
I'll give it a shot because it's it's a broad range of solutions. All of them reduce the number of conflict points inside of the intersection itself. So the conflict point is anywhere where two vehicle paths cross, usually like a through movement and a through movement, or a left turn and a through movement coming the other way. So we usually do that by moving left turns or through movements to a different area outside of the main intersection where it's safer for those movements to occur. So if you think of US 30 itself, like one of the most dangerous movements right now is to make a left turn onto US 30. So you're crossing one direction of traffic and merging into another direction of traffic. If you move that left turn to another location, it's where... Usually it's a U-turn, but it can also be a different intersection. It's much safer movement because you have less chance of collisions or less moving parts at a different location. But there's lots of buckets of reduced conflict intersections. It's a big umbrella term of lots of different solutions.
Other questions from the council?
I guess I have more questions, or are we
still getting into something? Right. So I think as we move forward into level two and level three, there will be some lines on a map. It won't be like a full design in our study. It's more these are the concepts that make sense, potential solutions, reasonable alternatives. And then a future project, if it scores well and NDOT chooses to move forward, that's where a design would actually show up.
So I would also reiterate what Rusty said, which is there's lots of ways to connect. I think the Propel study team has done a really good job of having open office hours at the library. I know you guys did a big session at the Indian Springs Middle School at one point throughout the process, and what's unique, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this process is fairly new to NDOT, and so getting additional public comment throughout every piece of the study is what makes this process unique to what NDOT typically does, right? Typically there's, I don't want to speak out of turn, but typically there's a lot less options to give public input on a project of this magnitude than what Propel is. Propel has literally every checkpoint has public study. And so I know that from the 30 Coalition standpoint, as well as the city standpoint, we're thankful that our residents, our businesses, certainly our elected officials are able to give comments along the way. I think that makes a lot of sense. If the council will indulge me, I would like to give an opportunity for anybody in the audience or department heads to give comments at this time. Is there any comments regarding US 30 for Palstead? Okay. So I want to encourage everyone to be engaged in this process. Thank you for being here, making the presentation. It means a lot to us. And I know you'll hear from me along the way, but,
yes.
But I'm sure that as we get more granular and get down to more of these intersections and kind of the different treatments, I'm sure you'll hear more from us. So thank you for your efforts.
As you said, that is the point of the PAL study, yes, try to make sure we hear from everybody.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Let me make trade my camera here, get it back to where it's supposed to be. Okay, next up is a presentation from Sean Ellis, Mission Pair 5. Come on up, Sean.
Thank you for allowing me to come and be on your agenda tonight. I appreciate it. So Mayor said I could have about 10 minutes, so I did about 3 hours of work for you for 10 minutes. So hopefully we can follow along a little bit and go through it fairly quickly, but just some high-level stuff for you to understand the presentation so far. So I am actually coming to you regarding the opioid settlement dollars that the city has received, specifically within Columbia City. And so I'm actually coming to ask for those dollars to be granted to Mission 25, specifically to the Recovery Engagement Center. So Mission 25, if you know, we actually are an umbrella of services. So we have four significant programs. We have our shelter services, which is a certified recovery residence. We have our supportive housing, which individuals can go into housing from recovery with us. We also have the Recovery Engagement Center, which is what we'll talk about today. And then we have a project out at a local mobile home park, well, out in the county, mobile home park that we also provide services to. So with that said, though, what we're going to talk about is specifically around the Recovery Engagement Center. So to again, kind of give you a little bit of background, so the Recovery Engagement Center is actually located at 605 South Douglas Avenue, which is directly behind Culligan. That building was actually gifted to us in 2018 from the Gospel Land Ministries Church. And the heartbeat then was to do something that's going to be engaging the community into that building. The only agreement was that we would not turn it into a liquor store or a tattoo parlor. So I said I could not guarantee that someone who has maybe used alcohol or had tattoos wouldn't be in there, but that's kind of where we're at. So we opened up, so we basically had that building in 2018. We've sat on it for a hot minute because we really weren't sure exactly what we wanted to do with that building. But over the last several years, the data that is coming through our organization alone and then within our own county, within the state, we realize that recovery does have to be a pivotal part of the work that we are doing. So in 2022, we received funding from the Division of Mental Health Addiction, a community collaboration grant that allowed us to actually hire Director of Recovery Engagement to position that individual out there in that space, but also to remodel that building. So in 2022, the spring of 2022, into the beginning of 2023, we remodeled that entire building. It's a beautiful space. When you walk in, you can just breathe. It's actually my staff's favorite place to go because our current location, you can't breathe in it. So, but if you go over to the REC, you can just pause and breathe for just a hot minute. In March of 2023, we actually opened up the doors to begin serving out there. And so what that means is we now have 8 recovery groups that are housed out there in that space. That is a meeting space. So it's a space to access recovery resources, services, and supports, and recovery coaches. So, and you'll see in my report that basically any group that has moved from a different location in our city into that space has more than doubled since they have entered into that building with those in recovery. That's phenomenal. I can tell you since March of 2023 to December, we had 1,600 recovery engagements inside that building. Those recovery engagements will encompass those attending recovery groups, any kind of events that we had out there, any kind of community training. We had 2 out there, and recovery coaching. So there's just a lot that's going on inside those walls. So that's kind of give you some background a little bit. So just to help you understand, like, the scope of work out there, what we plan to do moving forward, is really just opening up those doors and making it an even wider reach. So we do have intentions of increasing our ability to provide more community training around recovery, around addiction, making sure we have more access to for recovery coaching, and continue to increase the amount of groups that will be provided or offered inside those inside the walls there. Currently, we have those 8 groups. That's about 4 days a week. The intention is to actually get to a point where we're 7 days a week out there. So individuals, if they need a recovery meeting, there's one every day of the week. It's not just once or twice or so. The other thing to understand is it is multiple pathways to recovery, so we're not strictly an AA or an NA like your traditional 12-step programs. There's multiple ways of recovery out there, which is also a huge benefit. So if somebody is accessing a typical 12-step program, they might also want to do a journaling recovery pathway as well. So that allows them to access it more than once a week. And then I'll help you understand what we will not be doing out there. That is not a residential facility. So no one will be spending the night there. It is strictly for recovery meeting groups and supports and services and coaching. We will also not be providing medical services out there either. So we will not be providing MAT services. If you know anything about medication-assisted treatment, we will not be doing that out there. We will serve people who are on MAT because that is a form of a pathway, a recovery pathway. We also will not be providing therapy out there either. We will provide referrals to therapeutic services. That's not what this building is intended for. So the results, what they're going to look like, you're going to see more people in recovery. You're going to see more people having sustained recovery and long-term recovery. You also will be able to report that more people will enter into treatment because now they're coming into a safe space to have those conversations with people that they trust, and our staff will be able to refer them to appropriate places for their needs. This is, again, it's going to have to be on them, not us. We're not going to own somebody's recovery or someone's relapse. That's not ours to do. It will be up to them, but we will be that resource, and that's what they need. So to help you understand high-level requirements, if you don't know anything about Mission 25 or how we lead, we have very high expectations of the quality of work that we provide. And so, and you'll see it in just the different certifications that we offer on the very back flyer or that we are certified through. So we are certified through the Division of Mental Health and Addiction to be a certified recovery resident. We go through a lot to get that certification, and right now we're going through a recertification, and there's a lot tied to that. And so all of our recovery coaches are also, again, certified by FSSA, DMHA. Again, they carry those certifications and those credentials with pride and a lot of work behind it. We also have to ensure that we have the appropriate supervision for all of our coaches. So they don't just go through the academy and you now are a coach. There's supervision for every coach. So those coaches get supervision for 4 hours a month with an outside source that comes in and works with us to make sure that we are upholding and withholding, upholding the ethics and the standards of ethics. So understand that anything that we do inside the walls of the Recovery Engagement Center will be quality. We will have high expectations of anybody that's coming to lead a group. We will not micromanage that leader by any means, but they will understand, like, these are the expectations of how we will treat those that come inside these walls. There will be no shaming. There will be no, you're not choosing my group, you're choosing their group. We're not going to do that stuff. So just understand there's just a lot of high priority requirements to be inside those that building. Collaborations. Mission 25, we have strong collaborations. We do work closely with community corrections. We work closely with pretty much everybody, Department of Child Services, the school system, local churches, other recovery group leaders. So we actually provide recovery coaching for individuals in community corrections. We're providing recovery coaching for even Department of Child Services families as well. So we are connected with them very closely. And as we continue to gear up and add additional recovery coaches to this process, they will be spread out even more. So this will be a huge resource to our community, not just those that we're serving, but our community as a whole, along with even our workforce as well. So if workforce needs to access a recovery coach at any time, they can access one of ours. And then what the exclusion for this entire presentation is I'm not asking for funds to be directed to shelter services, although I will tell you that we fit within that realm for shelter services as well. But we are actually asking just for the Recovery Engagement Center. But if at any time through this process, if the council would ever say, hey, we can put money towards shelter services as well, we won't say no, just so you know, in case you're wondering. But just understand that, you know, we serve a lot of individuals with substance use disorders and a lot of individuals with co-occurring. So they're going to have the substance use disorders, and they're also going to have a mental health barrier as well. So that's pretty significant. So just understand that. But this, again, the exclusion of shelter services from this proposal, just so you know. The implementation plan, we've already been implementing. So this is just what we're asking you to do is come alongside of us and partner with us as we continue to do even more intensive work to make sure we're getting more access to recovery supports and services for those that need it the most. My mouth is, like, really dry. Okay. On page 3, you'll see the list of the opioid remediation uses. So I didn't know if you guys knew much about what the opioid dollars were supposed to be used for, but I did pull some of those for you to help you understand how some of those strategies will be directed towards the Recovery Engagement Center specifically, to kind of give you more of an understanding of what, like, how would we use these dollars. So I spelled that out for you. Specifically around the naloxone training, we do have nalox boxes. We have one at shelter services. We have one out at our Miami Village location. We will be adding one at the REC as well. Nalox box, all it is a small box. The Narcan is in there. They take it if they feel like they need it. We're not handing it to them. They take it on their own. That's just how it is, okay? And then we also can provide the layperson naloxone training, administration training. We actually have staff that are certified in that. We'll continue to have staff that are certified in that. We can also train those that are using or have used naloxone as well to make sure it's administered appropriately. We'll be able to do that. Expansion of the warm handoff. So we do warm handoffs already in shelter services. So when we're working with a client and we're going to hand off to a treatment facility, like, we will help equip that treatment facility with the information they need to know about that client to make sure they're getting the resources that they need. This is what we will also be doing at the Recovery Engagement Center as well. As we're navigating work with the individuals, we can have those conversations with treatment facilities or other recovery residences if needed. Same with any kind of therapeutic work or medical work. And then as far as Schedule B, Part 1, around treatment, so you'll understand if you dig deeper, you'll see. We will actually support 8 of the 15 strategies around treatment inside our walls. And I want you to understand that we are not a recovery treatment center. Okay, that's not what we are. We are a recovery engagement center, so we will engage people into recovery. We are not going to treat people for recovery. Be very, very clear on that. And then as far as connecting people who need the help to the help that they actually need, again, our staff is very trained. It's trained really well in how to do the case management, how to do the resourcing, how to identify their recovery capital, all their relational capital, like all those components that they need to make sure they're fully wrapped around all the services they need, all the people they need. And so this will be another piece of that. And then Schedule B, Part 3, other strategies would be the leadership and planning coordination. Again, we will continue to invest in the leadership and the staff and the collaboration efforts as well around training and making sure they're going to be equipped, they're going to be certified, credentialed, everything that they need to continue to do the work that they're doing. At the end of the day, we're not going to cause harm, right? So we want to make sure everybody's equipped so no one's causing harm. And so that's the whole purpose of all the intentional training and making sure not just my staff's trained, but also our collaborative partners are trained as well as those that are in recovery. So we want to help them understand why recovery is important to them as well. And then you'll see the proposed spending of the opioid dollars. Now, again, these dollars could be subject to change, right? So we know there's other things coming down, so things could change considerably. But just we drafted some things to give you an idea of how those funds would be spent. Specifically, the funds received to date, about almost $60,000, a big portion of the funds to date, what we're asking is we would spend those to help with the infrastructure in order to do like the virtual trainings, webinars, presentations inside those inside our building, because we know that there's going to be people that can never just travel to go to a presentation. Or what could we do to bring a presentation virtually at all different hours of the day based on people's work schedules? So there's going to be opportunities to do that to make sure, again, we are being person-centered, and it's not just about what we want to do, but what how we're going to meet their needs as well. So, with a very dry mouth, does anybody have any questions? The back side gives you kind of a snapshot just of our data for the last however many years. Actually, and it talks about the different programs that we have launched in the last 3 years. But again, we're talking about the Recovery Engagement Center, but just helps you better understand the full picture.
So let me give you a little more background from a funding aspect. So I actually... Interestingly, on Thursday, actually spoke with Betsy DiNardi from the Attorney General's office in person to talk about opioid funds and all that stuff. They actually made a presentation to the mayors about kind of the purposes behind it. So a couple things you need to know. First of all, those of you that if this is more than their first term, so everyone but Leslie, you may remember that we had to actually authorize a new fund to accept these dollars. There was two different kinds of funds, a restricted abatement fund and an unrestricted fund, okay? The abatement fund must go towards recovery of some sort, and Sean outlined a lot of those pieces. The unrestricted fund does not have to go toward that. Understand the majority of these dollars did come from the pharmaceutical companies that contributed to the opioid epidemic, okay? So I say all that to say that in talking to Betsy, she was very forthright, because I told her kind of what, you know, what Sean and I had been talking about for Recovery Engagement Center and what they were doing, and Betsy was like, that is absolutely down the lane we want to see. So I do want to let you know, I did talk through with the Attorney General's office in that regard. As the fiscal body, you have the ability to decide where these funds go and how they're being designated. The money will be distributed to the city through 2038. That is 14 years. Over the next 14 years, we've been getting a little bit over the last two, I think, something like that. But understand that they're coming in kind of bigger increments at first and smaller increments the further out we get. Further, you need to know that the Attorney General and the state of Indiana are in additional lawsuits right now with other manufacturers. So the number that I'm going to tell you we're projected to get by the Attorney General's office throughout this whole through 2038, the number I'm about to say could change. Okay, it won't go down, could go up. Okay? So for the abatement account, if you will, what is projected to come to the city through 2038 is $287,153. Okay? What is projected to come to the city through the unrestricted fund is $121,663. That is what they have on the website literally right now. Understand, however, that just to give you a perspective, and again, they front-loaded a lot of this money, but... just to give you perspective, in the 2022 total payment, Columbia City received $14,277 in unrestricted and $33,000 in the abatement. So that tells you, and again, it kind of peaks, I think, this year or next year, and then it starts to go down depending on what those other settlements do. Okay, so I give you all that context to say, as Sean and I were talking about the kind of recovery engagement, what they're doing, Mission 25. Really, they're one of few, if any, other organization in Whitley County that are doing this kind of work. It seemed to match up really well, which is why I asked her to come make a presentation to you about the funding. So there's the context behind the presentation, all that kind of stuff. So questions of Sean, Jennifer.
So I'm looking through here, and when we get these kinds of things, like I guess the framework for what I'm about to say is I want us to kind of look back to when we got our funds that we used for police and fire.
CARES Act? Is that what you're trying to wait?
No,
public safety law.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And how strongly I felt at that time about those funds not being used for salaries and
sure.
that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. There is no plan on your part to use this money for salaries, is there?
So if you the only plan in there for salaries would be, I think it was $5,000 each year or less, and it was for staff infrastructure. So, and that is not even, and when I say staff, it's like one staff member, which is the director of recovery engagement, which is positioned out there at that particular location. So, and her responsibility is to keep all those groups informed, keep all those groups operating, and she's also one of our recovery coaches. And she's also the one that's doing a lot of the work with our community corrections and our Department of Child Services right now. So she's the only position that a tiny portion of her salary would be within the staff infrastructure. And that infrastructure is very appropriate within these funds.
I understand that. I just take issue with building something where if that money goes away, mm-hmm. then somebody's job is threatened.
Sure. So she's already been with me on staff for about a year and a half. So her job's not going to be threatened at all. So if these funds go away, again, it's $4,000 or $5,000 of her salary. That's a small portion of what her salary is. That's the only part of this entire proposal that has anything to do with staffing.
Okay. I had a question.
Basically, it would be, yeah. So Dan asked about whether basically you could transfer our money to them. And so I think the proposal is a three-year agreement, as you kind of can see in the kind of presentation. It's a three-year agreement where we dedicate these funds to Mission 25 to do the work that's been laid out. After 3 years, then obviously Mission 25 would need to come back and have conversations or other organizations at that point. So.
Is it also possible in there for us to get a presentation report on an annual basis about how this is being used?
Absolutely.
And us to be able to decide annually whether we want to continue?
So, yeah, I mean, we can structure the agreement however you want. Obviously, Board of Works approved the agreement, but you approved the actual funding. So that's why we thought it was appropriate for Mission 25 to come to you first to get your blessing, if you will. So we can structure, I think, you know, Sean and I have had lots of conversations. We can structure the agreement however the council would see fit. We can put in any of those kind of things where if you want an annual report from Mission 25, I'm sure that would be no big sweat because she does that all the time. Mm-hmm. And reviewed yearly kind of thing. Absolutely. Kat, I'm sorry.
That's all right. So a couple things. One, I think the work you do out there is outstanding. I know that you spend a lot of time, work really hard at it. So congratulations on
Thank
that. So the figures that you put together, is this based on the expectation of what we're coming? Is that, I assume, how you put this budget together?
Yeah. I just went on. So I just knew the top number just based on the conversation Mayor and I had. So I actually had to go onto the website to identify the other 3 years.
Okay.
And again, these numbers can change. Like he said, they can fluctuate. They won't go down. They could go up.
Okay.
So, and that's kind of why I just said subject to change.
Okay.
That's why my recommendation would
sure.
be if we did the 3 years, we just say these dollars, whatever we receive is what we dedicate for this specific purpose. And then again, and maybe that's a good reason to come back every year to go
well,
what
yeah.
it is. And so.
And so at this point, is Sean the only one proposing to receive these dollars? I mean, we're not.
Yeah.
There's no other organizations that are even asking for them.
Yeah, the answer to that question is one, yes, but two, I don't know that there's many of any other organization that's
okay.
doing this kind of work in Whitley County. So it's kind of, I hate to say it, it's almost monopolistic in a lot of ways because we don't have five agencies that are going to be fighting over this money. We really don't have. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is there anybody else doing this work?
Yeah.
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Okay. I guess like I say, I concur with what Kat says about the work you're all doing out there is amazing because I know I deal with the jail ministry and we have people in there not knowing where to go.
Yep.
You know, and now they have to meet the criteria and maybe they can get some help and direction.
Yeah.
Because it's like I get questions all the time. I'm going to be getting out here in another couple of weeks. Where do I go? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, and that's what's nice. So I didn't talk about the new facility that's going to be built, right? So the new facility is going to be – so our current facility right now, we are a 30-bed facility. that can only house 4 men at any given time, right? And no fathers and children. And also now our current facility, we have 9 rooms dedicated for women and children. So our new facility will be a 54-bed facility. We will have 2 corridors, 4 wings total. The corridor, the men's corridor, will be separated into 12 single men and 4 fathers and children. To actually have a building that's going to accommodate 4 fathers and children is very rare in the state of Indiana. So that is going to be here in Whitley County in Columbia City. I'm so excited. And then on the other corridor, we will have 2 wings. We will have a wing for single females, again, 12 females, and then a wing for mothers and children. We are separating, or currently we serve them together. We're separating them in the next one because our new facility will be a trauma-informed space. So we know that we will have single females, because we know we have it now, that may have lost a child for one reason or another. And their healing process is stopped right there, because now they're engaged with other mothers and children. So how we will do work inside the new building is going to be incredible. We're super excited about it, and it's just, we cannot wait to break ground. So going back to what you're saying, our new facility will be able to accommodate more people. And right now we can't. And it is a huge issue. And we're also in a 70-year-old building that is not really meant to do what we're doing. So again, we're super excited about what's coming. The new facility also was funded through opioid dollars through the Division of Mental Health and Addiction. We were awarded $3.2 million to build this new facility. And so we are super excited about that. And so again, even the state of Indiana recognizes the work we're doing. We were the number one, out of I don't know how many that were selected, but we received the largest award in the state of Indiana to build the new facility that we're building.
And it wasn't close, if I remember correctly.
No, it wasn't. It was not.
Other questions of Sean?
I have a quick question. So since there's a restriction on what those funds can be used for, does anybody have to report that? They have to report?
Yeah, so there is an annual report, I believe, that in some way, shape, or form we have to send. However, as a part of that, we can certainly, if they're the ones that are doing it, it makes sense to have that report basically completed with our blessing to send. So, but yes, there is a process in which the state of Indiana requires us to report how we are using those funds to ensure that we're using them to what their standard is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good question.
With the capital build, I have to report monthly right now. I have to show how those dollars were used. I have to actually give a whole report on it. I don't know if it'll be as detailed for this process, but I am more than willing to give that for you if that's what you feel like you need.
As I understand it, talking to Betsy Donardi, she had said it's more categorization. Are you doing it for, naloxone? Are you doing it for this? Are you doing it for that? So it's more less segmented than probably
right.
What you're filling out for,
yeah.
Your big project, yeah. For sure. So
I just wondered if I had to do it.
Well, you may have to send it, but I'm not 100%
yeah.
Sure. So we can get that answer for you. Other questions of Sean? Okay, so what I heard from Jennifer, and I think I saw some bobbing heads as well, was a 3-year agreement with review yearly by the council and a yearly report for Mission 25 to you on the amount and what was spent effectively and how it was spent, I'm sorry. Yes. Is that that's agreeable to the council? Okay. Okay, so I think, what I'd like to have is a motion to dedicate the next 3 years of opioid settlement funds to Mission 25 with, under the, I guess, the agreement of the, or the tenants of the Board of Works agreement as we discussed. Does that make sense?
I'll make a motion for what you just said.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, motion second. Further discussion. Okay, all those in favor should be signed. It is unanimous.
Awesome.
Thank you
so much. And I invite all of you to come out and actually see the recovery incentive.
Yes. So we'll work on that agreement, and if we can get it around for the next Board of Works meeting, that'd be preferential.
Yep.
But, we can talk
about
that.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you
Great.
So much, guys.
Thanks, Sean. Okay. Next up is the agreement with the Humane Society of Whitley County. That looks like that is on page 7. Rosie, do you have anything to add to that?
No, they send us a report every quarter, and they, I don't know that they use the whole 25,000, but we always send them the 25,000 based off the animals that they pick up that are sick.
Well, I think what they're, as I read it, Dan, was they were taking in more strays than what they could bill us for.
That's what I was looking at, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I haven't seen this.
Oh, gotcha. Yes.
We need to look at budgetary wise next year. What,
so again, as always, you are the fiscal body, and so if that's what you want to put into your budget, you're free to do that. I again, ultimately, the Humane Shelter has acted as our animal control agency for a long time. They have, hey Gary, on the animal control agency with the Humane Shelter. Is, correct me if I'm wrong, but if we find stray animals or things like that, we can take them out to the Humane Shelter, right?
Correct.
And as we do that, I'm assuming that's where a lot of this accounting comes from, but, or if people drop them off, they say, where do you live, or that kind of stuff, and that's where it kind of gets dinged toward us, if you will. But the question, I guess, is what kind of services, outside of just taking the animals, what kind of services do you know the Humane Shelter provides to the city?
I do not. I know that when we take them out there, we fill out paperwork every time. Yeah. We drop the dog off or a cat off.
Yeah. And I know they've acted as like a temperament. They've tested temperament for dogs and things like that in the past when we've had other issues where they show, you know, they say, oh, this animal is safe to go back, or this animal probably needs to be put down.
Were they invited to come in and speak?
Rosie?
I thought maybe they'd be here. They just sent us and asked if they could be on the agenda for if we could get it approved. So I never asked.
It'd be
kind of
nice if they were in here.
Yeah.
They made a presentation a few years ago.
Sure, but.
It's about our tax abatements. People take advantage. They say, oh, it's just automatic. We're going to have them. Well, I think somebody else we're giving money to needs to give us.
Agreed.
And they need to be here
to answer these questions for us. Like, are we. Are we sending you too many animals?
Yeah, because on here, I mean, there is a shortfall of $13,000, or that they didn't bill us for.
Right, right.
Well, we're just over $13,000.
Yeah. But that's what those numbers add up to. Yes, I didn't. I didn't go through that step, but yes.
I was looking at too.
Could we table this and ask them to come in?
Absolutely, if that's what the council would, the council's budget, then yes.
I mean, I'd rather do that than like forecast what they're thinking.
Sure. Okay. Rosie, will you request the Humane Shelter to attend our next county council meeting or one in the near future? Thank you.
Yeah, I will tell you that looking at this, they do not have our second quarter on there, but the second half, because we pay them $12,500 twice a year. They only have one. They have it recorded, but they don't have the amount. So I figured when I calculated it, it was like short $1,000.
I want to add it up.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So they don't have a second $12,500 on there.
Okay.
So, yes, I will get a hold of them and ask them if they can be present.
Okay. So we will table this conversation until Humane Shelter comes to the council and presents.
Do we have to vote on the tabling?
I'm sorry. Do we have to vote on the table? I'm tabling this. Do we have to vote? No. No. Okay. Very good. Department head reports. Chip.
Last night we opened bids for Eagle Park. Very exciting. They came in well lower than they had last year, and I think we're going to move forward with the skate park and pickleball courts. So hopefully, if the budget works out right, we'll be doing that. And the next park board meeting next month. And earlier this evening, we opened up bids for Westgate Road reconstruction for phase two. And the bids actually came in below estimated budget. So hopefully, we'll be doing that within a couple weeks here. So that's all I have to report.
Questions of Chip? Thank you. Terry.
Matt and I finished work at the Eagle Park Conference Room. It's now up and running as far as being able to record and record all their meetings. Through Sean's effort, I think baseline's going to be out this week and hopefully run some fiber so we can finish the water department's booster station upgrade. And we're waiting on the weather to clear so the fiber break that's in the park can be repaired.
Questions of Terry? Thank you, Sean.
Well, with the weather, it's obviously not ideal conditions to be out working alongside the road. We have got some things done around the shop with some new lighting projects and moving some offices around. We did start on get a few of the trees for the tree board taken out, which was great with Kelly's help, Eric. Then in the earlier meeting at the Board of Works meeting, we were awarded a new bucket truck that we are going to order here in the next couple weeks, and 53 week lead time on that bucket truck. We only got two bids on it. This one came in about $40,000 cheaper, and the lead time on the other company was 50 to 53 months. So that's over 4 years. So it was kind of a no-brainer. We're going to start working on specs on a new truck, what we call our tree truck. It's our large 77-foot truck that's over 15 years old. But the lead time on that one, no matter who we go with, is going to be 3 to 4 years. So we'd like to get the specs done and get it ordered and get in line for that one. So.
Questions of Sean? Thank you. Kelly?
Busy taking care of roads, trying to keep them safe, roads and alleys for the community here lately. And I have reached out to a company to grind the leaves. We'll be working with them, hopefully start that next month, that grinding process. And other than that, just that's about it.
Questions of Kelly? Thank you. Matt?
Last Monday, we had an LP tank run out of LP at the pavilion, and so that caused us to come in, put heaters in, and to unthaw lines to get them started. Luckily, the company was able to come out within an hour and fill the tank, and then we were able to kick the furnaces back on. We're starting to look towards spring and getting stuff around for the pool. Taking some pump motors out that bearings sound like they're going out. The guys finished up the splash pad, new shed. Ladies have been selling the father-daughter tickets like crazy. We have 800 available, so between the two nights, Friday and Saturday, we do 400 each night. And totally right now, as of last Friday, I guess, we had about 110. And we had the ice rink shut down the last two weekends because of the extreme temperatures.
Questions of Matt?
I don't know how many of you said earlier, but I was lucky enough to run out the pavilion. If you get a chance to go down and take a look at the pavilion and the restrooms, they're wonderful. The guys did an awesome job painting that, and it's really, really nice. So I just, like I said earlier, I compliment the park guys for the work that they did on that. It's pretty sharp.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Okay, any other questions? I'm sorry. Gary.
Sergeant Fearnow, and K-9 officer Fearnow, resigned as of January 19th. An agreement has been drafted up by Marcia and agreed upon between Sergeant Fearnow and I with the blessing of the mayor for the purchase of biz. So she had like 1 to 3 years left of service. She was 7 years old, but so we drafted up an agreement for his comp time, which he had 88 hours of comp time. Hours, which in the amount of $3,086.16 that he awarded us for the remaining years of service. So he currently takes ownership and care of the dog, of biz now. So looking at getting the dog down the road once we get full staffed again, maybe. So that's my plan. Officer Bogner also resigned on the 12th. Realized that this wasn't the job that he thought it was, and decided to go back to doing what he was doing before, and He only had about 2 months on, so kudos to him for realizing, hey, this doesn't fit his life or whatever it is that he decided didn't work for him. So happy he made that choice for him and his family for the best they could do for them. So I did request of the Board of Works to open up the process in February. I never filled all three positions the last time that I had it, so I still had one spot open, you know, with these two, so I currently have three open positions, so I'll be opening up a process for three officers. I had some good working relationships this past week with the Whitley County Community Schools and other county officers from South Whitley County and Cherry Busco, so did a high school training at the high school, and that went very well, and it was very enjoyable from all aspects, from all three departments, so and the school. We toured Bowen Health's new building on the 18th and networked with staff out there. What a fabulous building. The rave, mass notification system is in full swing. The mayor put out a press release on that. And we obtained Hank Workman as our chaplain with Tim Scroggs as his associate, and which is also Tim Scroggs is the fire department's chaplain. So I think if Hank's not available, Tim will fit right in. Shane and James did use their plumbing skills to replace a faucet that was leaking in dispatch, so that saved us from having to call Flotec in. Response plans are being built by Shane and Matt, which response plans is once you put a call in, it recommends which unit and personnel to respond to that particular call. You can also put special instructions in there for the response. It's a really good tool that helps dispatch. So other than that, that's all I have.
Question to Gary.
I mentioned talking about having a chaplain for our police officers and my wife, okay? Does it get paid anything? And the answer is no. I wonder if that's something we need to possibly look at, you know, once we talk to a couple other cities and see them, you know, those local to our size, we could look at putting that in for a budget or something. I mean, I don't know. I think it's extremely necessary. But at the same time, I'm like, do we pay them? I don't know how that works. And then how do you structure it and how much?
Gary, do you know how that works in other communities?
I don't. I'll have to research that. We never have in the past, but you know, it's never been brought up.
I think the guy ought to do something. At the same time, you know, how do we do that? And how much? I mean, just something to think about out of the way.
I think they really enjoy doing it. Usually it's a crisis when we call them out. So, but
they're leaving whatever.
Other questions? Thank you, Mike.
We hooked well 7 and well 8 up to the fiber, working great. We did a PFAS test because I've had some phone calls requesting if we had it in our water. We did one with the state a couple years ago. Still haven't gotten a response back, but I was told by someone, if they're not getting back with you, it must have been good, because if you had a problem, they would have got with you. Before the big freeze, we had we put a couple meter pits in on Valley River Drive, and that, so hopefully that things will thaw out a little bit so we can get back down here on Chauncey Street.
Question to Mike. Thank you, Mike.
We were required yearly to have our flow meters calibrated for our permit. Those have been done. You heard me talk about our sludge pumps, that they could not make the delivery on that, so I had canceled that order. That is all taken care of. I have another plan that I've been thinking about day and night. I probably present something at retreat. Just to give you a heads up on what I'm thinking, and then we'll see if we can move forward from there. Completely different than what I was originally thinking. This is obviously going to be a little more expensive, but in the long term, I think it will hopefully resolve all the problems. Not only for us, but on down the line for who's ever going to be next. Met with the Wake Contracting, a company that's going to be redoing our restrooms, and they sent late this afternoon. I've got emails on all the fixtures and things that are going to be replaced. We just need to approve those, and then we'll move forward with their first draw on that so they can order material. The MOSH units that I talked about are headworks pumps, basically the little brains that monitors everything. They're scanning. My staff pulled brand new wires from the pumps themselves. The station's there, through all the conduit in the building, underground, up into the other building where these units will be installed. So we saved a tremendous amount of money there by that wire being installed ourselves. And then I've been working on the annual report for Steel Dynamics.
Question to Mike. Thank you. Marcia, Rosie, a couple things for your information. First, I had the honor of pleasure of speaking at the Bowen Center's grand opening on Monday. Beautiful space. I know one of the things that they're still waiting to be done, if you look at their sign, you'll notice the top portion is still kind of open and waiting for something. And so Rob Ryan, the director of the Bowen Center, had said that, you know, he was kind of inspired by Parkview when they say, you know, I don't know, Vivian Smith, born, you know, I don't know, 7 pounds, 8 ounces, whatever. Those kind of things that he said it'd be really neat to see, you know, I don't know, John 5 years sober and things like that. So I think it'll be neat to see that kind of in contrast to each other across the street from each other. But So that's why that sign isn't completed yet, but really beautiful space, I think very conducive to what they're trying to really look at, which is the whole self, mental health, but physical health and other things. They even have some space to build out additional, which I think is a really neat concept that probably too few of us actually use. So that's really neat. Let's see. Tomorrow, as long as school isn't delayed or canceled, our youth council will be going to the state house, so we'll have a fun trip down to Indianapolis tomorrow morning and back tomorrow afternoon with our youth council members. Thursday is the city blood draw for the wellness program for our city employees, and we also keep working. We have a meeting that afternoon regarding the test kitchen, so we got some hopefully some progress happening there. And then Friday night is the City Awards Banquet, so hope you can make it. And then Saturday is Renew Aesthetic. Aesthetics is opening there. They're doing the grand opening. They took over the Music Encounters building there on 9 and Walker Way. So they're having their grand opening this Saturday. Let me see if there's anything else. I don't see a whole lot else on there, so I think that's all I got. Dan? I
have the privilege of going down to Indianapolis with AIM, with the newly elected officials conference, and I have to admit I was a little skeptical about going, but after I got down there I did learn quite a bit of stuff, plus I got to know Leslie and Jennifer a little better also on some things, you know, how other cities are doing. We're so lucky to have what we have in Columbia City when you hear the horror stories of other cities and towns down there. It's like, you know, we're not anything like that. You know, we have a group of great people here working together to achieve great things. And, you know, and so, yeah, you go down there to feel pretty good about Columbia City. So, that was actually a huge benefit for me, even though I've been there. This is my fifth term. I'm still learning. So, you know, everything evolves. Everything evolves. So we continue to learn. So it's a great, great experience.
Great. Thanks, Dan. Jennifer.
What I wanted to add about that, too, is the last time that I was there was before the pandemic. Uh-huh. And it was really apparent to me through the training sessions how much has changed in what we do and, you know, everybody's roles. A lot has changed since that time. So it was definitely a valuable experience and worthy of us, you know, stepping out of what we have going on in our lives for 4 days to go down there and gain some new knowledge and information. One of the things that we gathered down there was we learned a lot about public meetings and legalities, and got to speak with lawyers about that and ask some pretty specific questions. So I can tell you I'm quite sure that we will have a proposal coming forward in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, that will kind of encapsulate a lot of what we learned and a lot of the questions that we asked and the input that we got from people that know a whole lot more than we do.
Yeah, say to both of your points, and there's a lot of crazy things that happen in public meetings across the state of Indiana that thankfully don't happen here, that we don't want to happen here. you know, it going much past individuals making their voices heard and much closer to just true kind of, I don't know, anger, mutiny, kind of bad stuff. So, so yes, appreciate that.
No.
Okay, great. Chad?
Nothing.
Jenny?
Nothing.
Wesley?
I will just extend what Jennifer and Dan had said. I really enjoyed the newly elected official meeting. Learned a lot, made a lot of connections with folks. Just sharing a lot about Columbia City. Very proud to be able to talk about it. And then just want to congratulate and thank the employees that will be honored on Friday for their commitment and hard work.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that. There's no media. Members of the public, name and address, please.
Hey, Melanie Love, 113 East Market Street. I am once again standing up here and telling you I really think that we need to have chickens in city limits with reasonable parameters because, again, they provide food security. They help us move towards sustainable living, which I know is something that we're passionate about here in Columbia City. We've talked about it a lot. Also, they help reduce waste by efficiently recycling your kitchen scraps into a cost-effective fertilizer, which is also high in nutrients. The eggs that you get from chickens that aren't, you know, mass-produced and shoved into horrible containers for, you know, massive companies. The eggs that you're going to get in your backyard are just absolutely so much better. They've done numerous studies and tests on these and found the nutrients to be much, much better for you. It gives us the opportunity to be better stewards of the land that we're given and reduce the negative environmental impact that we cause by our urban living. And I just feel like this is, yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's definitely something that it would be worthwhile. So, thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we will call the meeting adjourned. Thank you.